The Big Show continues, brought to you by The Comedy Cave. The best comedy for the cheapest price, only $10. Visit ComedyCave.com for daily specials and showtimes. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
One of the funniest bits ever was Boomer making fun of you with this song. Start it again, Josh. It started right from the beginning. Just making fun of you ruthlessly for the...
You know,
it was one of my funniest moments here, just sitting here.
You have to be more specific than that.
It was about this specific song.
Oh, yeah, I know. But, I mean, making fun of me has been... It's essentially what got this guy his job in business.
Boom, 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 boom,
don't make
boom,
fun of this
boom,
song. One of my favorite. And then I listen to you guys. It's like an Oilers home game with that Dutch rap music that you guys play coming in. Hey, look, it's a porn from Amsterdam. I recognize the music.
And you would. If there's one gentleman who's up on his Dutch pornography, it is the man who's with us for the rest of the week. The only week this summer that Mr. Kerr is in with us.
It'll be a minor miracle if I make it to the end of the week.
Oh, you'll be fine.
I don't know. Yesterday was a rough one.
We got Flames news to talk about.
Everybody mad yesterday.
No, we didn't.
Everybody was angry.
Everybody's angry
at
you.
If you're a player agent driving around and we make fun of your player, beat it. Could care less.
Don't know if we made fun of the player.
If you're thin-skinned and you think we're making fun of the media, beat it. To borrow Lou's line, just beat it. Go away, everybody. That's what I'm... You know, I'm in one of those moods. You know what? This might be the day where everybody should just turn off the radio.
Hey, he just told you to go away. Go away, everybody. So
I'm prickly.
We'll just talk to ourselves
just
today.
Just talk to ourselves.
It's Rob and Pat talking to nobody.
There's a really better than average chance I just won't make it to the end of the week.
There'll be some sort of defamation lawsuit. There'll be policemen
knocking on the door going, hey, can you come with us? It's not out of the realm of
possibility. Can you be happy? Can you be friendly?
That's a question my family has asked for an awful long time, and we've never come to a conclusion.
Can you be excited? We had a good game in the Stanley Cup Final last night. We've got some interesting Calgary Flames news
that we can get into. Calgary Flames news. Be happy,
Rob.
Be happy. It sounds like this is how Bobby McFerrin got his career started, right? Bobby McFerrin was doing sports talk radio in the Caribbean, and, you know, they said, Bobby, why aren't you, you know,
Funny enough, sports talk radio got its start.
Don't worry, be happy.
In the Caribbean. Right. Okay, where do you want to start? Do you want to start with Flames, or do you want to start with the game last night?
Well, wherever you like. Terrific hockey
You're grumpy, so I want to make sure that we're doing things the way you want.
Terrific hockey game last night. Not surprising, we talked yesterday about the statistical numbers that pointed to, you know, game three domination from Boston and you know, the trials and tribulations of the Hawks in game three. Well, it holds up. So the Bruins are now 4-0 in game threes this playoffs, and the Blackhawks are 0-4. It seems to me, just based on, again, more math, that the Hawks have been able to overcome that small. You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
That was funny.
Happens all the time.
You run your forehead into the microphone?
Happens all the time.
That's awesome. Pat, tomorrow I expect the Chicago Blackhawks to come out and play well. I don't think the Bruins roll over and show their soft underbelly or anything like that.
But the Hawks will be better tomorrow. Yeah, I agree.
You know, and I kind of complained and whined a little bit yesterday about how we've, you know, in the media, we just so high and so low, and, you know, the Bruins lose game one. How are they ever going to come back? The emotional blow of this. Oh, the Bruins come back and win in Chicago. Oh, now they're going home. They win all these game threes. How will the Hawks ever come back? Look, big blow taking Marian Hossa out of the lineup. And you know, you do credit. I'm not taking anything away from the Bruins. That was a dominant home performance. 71% in the faceoff circle against a good faceoff club. They, you know, one of those games where you would go to the... you know, the what do we call them? The advanced stats guys.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is we'd see it incredibly lopsided in terms of scoring chances, puck possession, and things like that. The home team was dominant. They just were. The biggest head scratcher I have in this whole thing is, and we talked yesterday about it, is the power play for the Blackhawks. It just 0-for-20. They don't look dangerous. They don't look anything like a team that is capable of coming up and being, you know, difference makers. As I said yesterday, and it didn't change, it was like, oh, okay, well, they're coming out for the power play. It just probably means 2 minutes where Boston has to be a little conservative offensively.
They go 0-for-5 last night, and the Bruins end up scoring a power play goal because Boston's power play was kind of the same story in the first two games. Didn't look all that dangerous, and yet Bergeron scores that second period power play goal, and... From that point on, it kind of seemed the Bruins kind of transformed into last year's LA Kings. It kind of seemed after that 2-0 goal, there's like, good luck, but you're not getting past Boston here. They're choking this thing off, and the final 36 minutes or 26 minutes is going to be controlled by the Bruins, and that's kind of what you saw. And I think that the fact that they finally were able to score a power play goal of their own and the Chicago man advantage continued to struggle the way it did, I think that played a big part in it.
You know, I recognize that in the regular season, the Blackhawks were only 19th in the National Hockey League on the power play. I mean, they were, you know, 16.7%. Just because I can, you know, the Calgary Flames were 9th at 20%. You know, the Flames had a much better power play. But that's not my point. My point is it just doesn't seem that threat. And I don't understand that. With Seabrook and Keith and Letty back at the points, with Taves, Kane, Patrick Sharp in particular, with Andrew Shaw who's going right now, Brandon Saad, you know, you've got all these pieces that seems to me there should be more of a threat. And to me, it's almost as if the Chicago power play is giving the Bruins. And the Bruins, look, what did I warn you about way back a long time ago? That it's too easy to get caught up on one team and never give credit to the other team. And the Bruins' penalty kill has been excellent. It was excellent during the regular season. It's been excellent all the way through. But my God, at some point, that collected talent should rise up and put the fear of God into you. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think they tested Tuukka Rask, who, again, you just aren't going to beat with a long shot.
Well, and I thought that, you know, and once again, Boston, that's what they do. It's how they have been one of the elite organizations and elite teams over the last 3 or 4 years. They don't allow quality scoring opportunities. They make life easy for the most part on their goaltenders, and their goaltenders, whether it's Tim Thomas or Tuukka Rask, are really good when the chances
get there.
Are
they system goalies?
I don't think so. I really don't. Because what Tim Thomas did on their run to the Stanley Cup Final, no goalie's ever done things like that in the regular season and the postseason. So, yeah, I mean, it's helped because the team in front of them is really good. But I don't see them being quote-unquote system goalies. And I think Tuukka Rask showed you that in period one of game two. I mean, he was incredible, making 18 stops, and the only goal that was scored on him was a scrambly goal where he had seven guys in front of him, and somehow the puck found its way in. Yeah. So I don't see Tuukka Rask being that type of guy.
I look back at the first couple of games, and the Hawks held a definitive lead in shots. I mean, you know, considerable. And I don't think he's a system goal. I just think this day and age we have so much attention and so much detail. You know, we were talking about advanced stats. I do believe that at some point we almost forget that the gut, the head, the heart, the X factor in all of this. And I think it was coming home. I think it was playing in front of their own crowd. I think it was feeding off an overtime win. You know, somebody aptly put it this morning. I was listening to Boomer and Pete. We're one post, Zdeno Chara post away from this being 3-0 Boston.
Yep.
And a possibility of it ending tomorrow. I still believe Chicago's got something left. And you know, Hossa's going to look. I thought Hossa was the best player on the ice the first two games. That's you taking that out of the lineup, that's going to hurt you every time.
Yep.
I get that.
Sounds like he will play tomorrow in game four, by the way. Yeah.
What a couple of things that jump out at me, Pat. And here I am kind of going back and forth on numbers, but first time in this series that they played 60 minutes, didn't go to overtime. But everybody who played over 11 minutes. Pardon me, over 10 minutes. Even Ben Smith. You know, Ben Smith playing his first playoff game
came
this season.
Came in for Hossa.
10 minutes, 23 seconds. How rare is that? Even in the regular season, how rare is that? That you're able to dress two teams that have lineups where everybody can play more than 10 minutes. You're not hiding anybody. You're not burying anybody.
First game of the Stanley Cup Finals for Victor Stahlberg comes in and plays 11 minutes. Yeah.
You know, there's real depth in this organization.
And that's not a surprise on the Bruins side of things, although Dogavin's play is only 6.5. But other than that, you're right, though, because it's not a surprise on the Bruins side of things, because that's what they've been doing throughout the year.
Thank you. You're actually, so did Sean Thornton. So all of this... Sean Thornton played 6.5. Where's Dogavin's here?
He's at the very top.
He's right at the top. Sorry.
Bruins don't have any players.
I was looking at Chicago.
Bruins don't have any players in single digits in terms of their number.
No. That blows my mind.
It's not
as fancy a stat as I made it out to be.
But you know how most defensemen wear twos and threes and fours? The lowest number that a Bruins player wears is 16.
Well, when you retire a bunch of them.
That's true.
Right? It's like in Montreal.
How come nobody wears four in Boston?
I don't know. Come on, put that back into circulation.
Whoever wore that.
Then, just while we're debunking myths, or debunking my false information, whichever you want to put. A lot, you know, obviously we'll get into a talk and conversation about the local hockey heroes and the rebuild and all of those things. One of the things that happens, we get sometimes we get fixated on things and we get talking about things. And there was a lot made, rightfully so. Please understand, I'm not devaluing it. I'm not debating it. But a lot was made this year about the Ottawa Senators roster, and you know, 17 players were drafted by the Ottawa Senators. Wow, I mean that's unbelievable, right? And you get caught up in looking at the situation here, going, well, geez, you know, Backlund and Berchi were draft picks. Irving, when he was up, was a draft pick. You know, that's always been the thing. The Calgary Flames, when you look at game notes and they start, how are the teams built? The Flames are never wowing you on homegrown talent.
Nope.
14 players in the roster last night for the Boston Bruins acquired in trade.
Including some pretty important ones.
Yeah.
And Chara's not even on that list, and he's a UFA signing.
Right. Seidenberg, Boychuk, Bartowski, Bartowski didn't play. Campbell, Horton, Ferentz, Sagan, Hamilton's in there. Those are the pieces that came back in the Kessel deal. So yeah. I guess they're drafted, which kind of debunks, but... you know, Rask, Peverly. Yeah, I'm debunking all my own stuff. It's great. You know, I'm having a great day. Just a fantastic
day. The one thing I'll say before we move on to the Flames, the one thing I'll say about that, because I saw that as well, and I know the guys in Hockey Central were talking about it just before the big show kicked off, but the most important players on this team, other than Rask, and they got Rask for Andrew Raycroft, but you take a look at Lucic, you take a look at Krejci, and you take a look at Bergeron, and I guess you throw Marchand into that mix as well. Yeah. The four most important forwards, those guys are all drafted by this team. So they still were able to get an elite core.
Right, and my only thinking was because that had come up so much in the kind of the watching practices and being out on the road, and you kind of talk about it, where's this team going? Well, you look at Ottawa, there are different ways to skin a cat. And there, I am not here to try and present an argument that says developing your own players, drafting your own players isn't the route to go. Not at all. But there are different ways of going about it.
Yep.
And we can get into the conversation about Corbin Knight. I don't profess to know where he's going to end up this year. I don't know what the expectation for him is. But I think he's a very important player in the grand scheme of things, which is I'd rather see kind of an unproven NHL prospect than, you know, another free agent or another older player coming.
I agree.
You need to restock those prospects.
Okay, a couple of things right now. First of all, the big show is well underway. Steinberg and Kerr along with you. Coming up this hour, we're going to head to Seattle and hear from Dave Softy Mahler at KJR Sports Radio in Seattle. Softy's joining us. The whole rumor of the NHL in Seattle continues to pick up steam. That's coming up at 2:25.
I'm going to be disappointed if they don't go to Seattle. I got to be honest with you.
Oh, absolutely.
Not that there's anything wrong with Phoenix.
All we've heard is that Seattle. And at 2:45, Dave Campbell joins us from 6:30 Chen in Edmonton. Just more bad news. I feel just awful. I was saying this last hour. Matt Nichols can't catch a break.
No, he can't.
The Eskimos can't really catch a break when it comes to quarterbacks. And just news coming down right now. A couple of people have thrown us out there now.
We got to watch this, though, Pat, because we ran yesterday with the Mark Streit contract. And then later that night, the Flyers came up.
No.
Remember, we kind of mentioned tagging in all of this. Turns out tagging was an issue. So until they do something, and we can talk, this is going to morph into the conversation or come into the conversation about the Flames and Corbin Knight. This is going to be a two-parter.
Yeah.
Right? It's done. Now we just got to make it work.
Just reports out there that Slavovoynov is signed with the LA Kings. But that, again,
we'll wait and see if they deny it,
if the Kings deny it.
What a playoff. What a season.
I just remember, and I don't know if you were there or not, it was the Hockey Night game, the first game that Calgary lost in L.A. in that
back-to-back. Oh, I was there.
You were there for that?
Oh, yeah.
And Voynov was out of his mind that game.
I was with the Fan 960, or the Sports...
Oh, that's right.
What are we this week?
The
Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Whatever the name of this
program. The sales tour.
Yeah, I was hosting John Arisaki from Vet Japanese Village, Sammy from Shanks, to name a few.
Scotty Roberts.
Cal from Cal Tire, which still blows my mind. Cal was actually Cal from Cal Tire. Yeah, there was Scotty Roberts was there, absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, Voynov, he was excellent. But I mean, again, what he did in the postseason, you know, we'll see. I'm still a little bit leery about, you know, a guy who's done it 1 or 2 years and then giving him the 6-year deal, but, you know.
And we'll wait and see in terms of official confirmation on Voynov.
Another guy that would use the KHL as leverage, eh?
Absolutely. And why wouldn't you? Because there's a decent chance that he might go over there.
Sure.
And do we have that officially now? Yeah, we do. The LA Kings have confirmed it. Slavovoynov has
Paul
signed
Holmgren, though,
a 6-year contract.
I wait for Paul Holmgren to kind of confirm everything.
No, the Kings haven't done
even
that.
Even deals not involving his team.
The Flames also confirmed the summit today. Bob Stauffer at 6:30 Ched kind of put it out there on Twitter after the show yesterday that the Oilers had tried to chat with the Florida Panthers and bring in Corbin Knight, the Florida Panthers' fifth-round pick back in the 2009 draft. In talking with Knight and his camp, you know, didn't seem like there was going to be a possibility. And he said, expect the Flames to do so. The Flames have done so today, trading a 2013 fourth-round pick to the Panthers for Corbin Knight, who just finished his senior year at the University of North Dakota. High River product, played junior A with the Okotoks Oilers, had 49 points in 41 games with the Fighting Sioux last year. And this is significant for a number of different reasons. I mean, number one, he was a pretty highly sought-after guy.
He was.
And who had decided that he was going to go the route that Justin Schultz did last summer. And because
great conversation you had at the end of the last segment, though. And did it come off? I just was walking in the room. Did it come off the text line?
Yeah, on the Gaudreau point.
On the Gaudreau point, yeah.
Well, look, every college player, if they're going to get drafted in the NHL, every team is running this risk right now. They didn't close that loophole in the new CBA.
Yeah.
It says that if you get drafted and 4 years later you haven't signed, you become an unrestricted free agent in mid-August. Stat. Doesn't matter. So if Rob Kerr gets drafted by the Banff Fighting Squirrels and decides at some point that he hates the mountains, he can say, no, screw it. I want to go play in a big city, and somebody else is going to sign me. I'm not signing there, and you're an unrestricted free agent. And if you're a really good player, like Justin Schultz was, you're going to have a bidding war for you. And that's exactly what Justin Schultz had.
I'm really curious, because Corbin's coming on a little later on, just to get the sense from him. I don't think, and this is Rob Kerr's interpretation of it, and we've already noticed that I've made a couple of heady errors.
So later we will
so
debunk
we'll probably debunk this whole thing. I can't help but think this is more of a case of a player going, oh, they got a lot of prospects. Because the Panthers have had a ton of draft picks the last 3 or 4 years. They've got a lot of kids, whether we don't watch them that closely, but they got the Nick Bjugstads, they've got the Quentin Howdens. There are lots of players there. If you want a fast track, if you want, even the Oilers, if the Oilers were in on this, I mean, I'm not suggesting the Oilers aren't going to be a good team or a bad team or anything like that. I'm just suggesting if you're a hockey player and you want to play, you want to go, you want to get started now, this is the place to come.
Right.
This is Ben Hanowski. This is the place to come. John Weisbrod's whole thing, was Ben Hanowski ready for the National Hockey League? No. But the Calgary Flames were in the unique position of being able to play him and give him that taste. So Ben Hanowski goes back home to Minnesota, goes, geez, I spent time around Mark Giordano. I spent time around T.J. Brody.
I know how fast the NHL is and what I need
that.
To do.
So, and I'm sure the Flames would have loved to have gotten Corbin Knight at the end of the season and played him and give him that opportunity. But if I'm Corbin Knight, I'm looking and going, I'm close to home. I've got a great family. I'm a former Oiler, Okotoks Oiler. This is a perfect scenario because this team is going to give me a chance. And I can't help but think, Pat, at the end of the day, it's probably nothing more than opportunity.
Yeah, and I mean, you get your opportunity with the Flames. There's no doubt about it. I don't think there's any doubt that the being close to home thing has a big part in it. You get to play for the team that you probably cheered for growing up. And from a Flames perspective, I saw a couple people when, was going back and forth on Twitter about it today saying a fourth-round pick, that seems pretty steep. Well, I happen to believe that there's already a deal in principle agreed to. I think that's probably a good.
Oh, it's
a, good
it's
thing.
A steep price if he walks away. But based on what I read in the, this is like Kari Ramo.
Yeah,
if
they
you don't
can't
think,
announce
if
it
you
until
don't
July
think the
5th.
Deal's done, they can't announce it, right? So this is what they really should have had is Paul Holmgren put this one out. He should have said.
Well, Paul Holmgren's already come out and said nope, he's not signing.
No,
to give up a fourth round
I'm
pick.
Pretty comfortable suggesting this that Corbin will be at the prospect camp at Winsport coming up in July.
And I'm pretty confident that he's a guy that probably would have drawn a lot of suitors. A top 10 finalist for the Hobey Baker Award coming up at the end of the college year.
Are we going to have time to talk about this later on?
Absolutely, we got
a couple.
It's a big story. It's an interesting story.
Yeah, but I'm excited, but I'm tempering it. I learned a lesson. I'm full of lessons. I've learned lessons.
I'm debunking myths
and lessons.
Learning lessons.
And, okay, so I'm having I'm thinking maybe I won't show up tomorrow. And I'm saying,
fingers crossed.
Right. Maybe I won't see the end of the week. And then who calls while we're on the air? Paul. What good is beef jerky going to do me in
Paulie.
This situation?
Oh, Paulie. I don't know who Paul is.
Paul. I know him as Paul. And now, Paul's answer to everything is, here is a basket of beef jerky.
Yeah, there's a bag of beef jerky with your name on it.
Here's some ends. I'm going to help you out. It's Big Chief Beef Jerky. You'll love it. So I'm already beginning to feel like I might make the end of this week.
Anyway, to wrap up the Corbin Knight discussion, the reason why
we have to go.
We got a guest calling in, but the reason I like it is here's a guy that, the very least, whether he turns out or not, they've talked about needing to fill that kind of second tier of prospects, 20 to 25 years of age.
Absolutely.
They've got plenty who are in that 18 to 20, 21 range, but that little bit more mature group. And here's one who does just that. And he's a guy who is kind of progressed beyond a fifth-round pick that Florida picked him at in 2009. So they gave up a fourth-round pick for it. I'm okay with it because I think that he'll be in the fold. So I'm interested, and I'm interested to see how it plays out.
I know we're up against it, but quickly, he fits exactly the mold of what John Weisbrod, Craig Conroy, Jay Feaster have talked over and over about. He's a leader. He wore a letter in North Dakota, won awards for leadership. He's got good hockey sense, both ends of the ice. I love the fact that they really trumpet his face-off ability, that this is one of the best face-off men in the NCAA. And Lord knows, this club can use an infusion of that talent.
Right.
Right?
Point per game in his final 3 years at the University of North Dakota, 49 points in 41 games during his senior year. Corbin Knight acquired by the Calgary Flames from the Florida Panthers. When we come back, is the NHL really Seattle-bound? And does Seattle care? It's next on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, back in studio today. Pat Steinberg along with you. Welcome back to the program. Interesting story coming out over the weekend out of the Emerald City in the Pacific Northwest, and that is the mayor of Seattle comes out and says, hey, we're prepared to have an NHL team in this city for next season, and we're willing to, you know, we think that the Key Arena could sustain it for a couple of years, and give us time to get the rest of the arena deal in place. All this coming on the heels of the Sacramento Kings staying in Northern California and that whole plan for that arena not really having a tenant right now. And for us fans of the NHL up here, we continue to hear Seattle, 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 and whether or not that's a potential landing spot for the Phoenix Coyotes, and we have no idea what the future of the Coyotes is. Now, there was a story a number of months ago about Wayne Gretzky being in Seattle, talking to some people in the Bellevue area and talking to people in the Pacific Northwest about a potential team. We brought this man on. He gave us some good information. And we bring him on once again from KJR Sports Radio in Seattle. Dave Softy Mahler joins us. Dave, appreciate this. How are you today?
No problem. What's happening in the former home of the Mariners AAA baseball team?
Oh, some of the greatest years ever for the Calgary Cannons was when they were
you remember Edgar Martinez coming
through
there?
I sure do. Edgar came through. Brett Boone came through. I worked for the Cannons as a young man, so I absolutely remember. So things are going rainy here.
Baby. Those are the days.
The weather outside is why the Calgary Cannons no longer exist in this city, however, because it snows and rains a lot in April, May, and June in this city.
Well, it rains up here in Seattle and Tacoma, so it's not much different. But the key there is that Tacoma's about a half hour away versus about, 1,000 miles away?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a good deal for them. But I tell you what, they used to develop a lot of great players in Calgary, and it seems like that well's dried up. So maybe they should move back.
We'd be all for it, man. I would lead the charge. Are you leading the charge for an NHL team in Seattle?
You know, I think we're all leading the charge. I mean, obviously, there's nothing we can do at this point but wait and see what happens in Glendale. At their city council meeting next Tuesday, the 25th, they're going to vote on that proposed lease agreement with Renaissance Sports and Entertainment, the people that would like to buy the Coyotes and keep them in Glendale in the Phoenix, Arizona area. So we're just waiting to see what happens next week with that vote. And if that vote falls apart and they don't come up with the cash to placate the new owners of the Coyotes, then they could be moving. I mean, the Board of Governors meeting is in New York, I believe, next Thursday. So we could potentially find out in the next 8 or 9 days if hockey is coming back to Seattle. You know, Seattle won the first Stanley Cup way back in 1917, the Seattle Metropolitan. So I'm not sure if anybody's around that remembers those days, but there is a giant, I think kind of sleeping giant of hockey fans here in Seattle. The T-Birds get great support. The Everett Silvertips get great support. A lot of people like to go to Vancouver to watch the Canucks play hockey. So I've always thought of this as a real sleeping giant as far as a real nice hockey fan base, and we'll see if that actually is rewarded next week.
Knowing that and knowing how big of a wave the potential move that Sacramento to Seattle would have made and how big a story that was in your city, how much of a dent has the NHL and it possibly moving to Seattle made?
Well, I mean, look, the phone lines are lighting up all day yesterday, all day today. Hockey fans are coming out of the woodwork, wondering and asking what's going on. Obviously, the big question is, where would they play? Can the arena get built if it's hockey before basketball? There's a memorandum of understanding that's good for 5 years right now between Chris Hansen and the city of Seattle and King County, but that was all contingent on basketball coming here first. So obviously, if a hockey owner stepped up and a team moved here, they would have to find a way to bridge the gap and get the arena built with hockey first and then NBA second. And the good news for us is that the guys that are stepping up, Ray Bortisek and Anthony Lanza, were both brought to the table through channels provided by Chris Hansen. So it sounds like those guys might be on the same page and kind of know how this is going to work, if it does work at all.
Dave Softy-Mahler is with us from KJR Sports Radio in Seattle, joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. The viability of a team, if they had to stall and buy some time to get that arena built and to get an agreement made, could it be viable even for a season or two playing at Key Arena?
I think so. I mean, look, it's only going to be a season or two, or maybe a year and a half. I mean, Key Arena only seats about 11,000-12,000 for hockey. It's not a hockey arena. It was not built for hockey. It was not constructed or planned for hockey, which was obviously a mistake. When they renovated the old Coliseum back in the 90s, they should have made it big enough for hockey. We went to the finals in Chicago that year against Michael Jordan, and the United Center had opened up about the same time Key Arena did, and the United Center was way ahead of its time. It was absolutely built the right way. Key Arena was built the wrong way. It was built for basketball. It was built for concerts and ice escapades and children's shows and things like that, but was not built for hockey. So, it's really not a great hockey venue at all. The T-Birds of the Western Hockey League used to play there, and the South Stands, literally the lower bowl of the South Stands, has to be removed to make room for the South Goal. So the South upper deck and the second level literally almost hangs right over the South Goal of the hockey rink. So, but again, if they're there for a year and a half and the NHL signs off on it, as long as there's a shovel in the ground and the arena is being built and there's some light at the end of the tunnel, I think everybody would be okay with Key Arena, but not as a long-term possibility. No chance.
Okay, now let's assume that that there is interest and that the NHL signs off on it.
Yeah.
And there is not an NBA team in the near future coming to Seattle. Can that arena be built without an NBA team in your mind?
Well, I think it can. Somebody would have to put up a bunch of money to make it happen, because the majority of that cash to build the arena would have come from the NBA owners. Now it's going to have to come from the NHL owners. And as far as I know, Chris Hansen is not going to be involved in the ownership group. So this would mean, Bortisek and Lanza would have to put that money up with the other investors they've got. Bortisek is worth about $5 billion. He's an oil trader. I believe his wife is from the Bellingham area, which is just north of the British Columbia border with Canada. So bottom line is, those guys would have to float the cash, and they'd have to find a way to make that work. I think in the end, if the arena does get built and there's a hockey team there, we've always thought it's only a matter of time before the NBA comes back. But if it's a long-term home, 10, 15 years, whatever, and all it houses is hockey, somebody's going to have to put the pencil to paper and make sure that that financially works, because that would mean spending a lot more money from the hockey side than the basketball side.
Dave Softy-Mahler is with us from KJR Sports Radio in Seattle. Just a couple more for you. First of all, you talk about the sleeping giant that could be hockey fans in Seattle. How much of an opportunity do you think that the maybe fringe fans or the outside fans might be able to flock to a new team, a new pro sports franchise in your city?
Well, the great thing about Seattle is that if you put a hockey team here, you're the only hockey team south of Vancouver and north of San Jose. So you're talking about, having access to all of Washington, all of Oregon, parts of Northern California, Idaho, Montana, even Alaska. The Mariners and Seahawks are really a regional franchise. They do well drawing from all over the Pacific Northwest. So I think you'd have a chance, if you won games and you put a good product out there, which is always the key, as you guys know, they'd have a chance to draw fans from all over the Pacific Northwest. But we took a bunch of calls yesterday from people promising to buy season tickets. I know it doesn't mean squat. It's just a guy calling a radio show and not yeah. putting any real money down. But people were fired up calling the show, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy tickets, I'm in. So there's a lot of hockey fans in this city, in this area, in the I-5 corridor, which you know is about 4 million strong, which I think would love to go to a hockey game. And again, if you win games, you have a chance to, you know, to really draw from all over this region.
And final question for you, is there anything new about a prospect of an NBA team? Like, do we have anything that Seattle people could be excited about that potentially coming home?
Well, I think, you know, right now we're just kind of in a holding pattern. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when David Stern steps down in February of next year and Adam Silver takes over. I mean, obviously, Chris Hansen is not giving up the fight. He's made that pretty public. We're waiting for maybe the expansion possibility, waiting to see what happens in places like Milwaukee and Charlotte. You know, the Bobcats aren't making money, and the Bucks need a brand-new arena. So we're going to see what happens with some other franchises. But I think, again, you know, as long as Chris Hansen stays in the hunt, there really was some positive things coming out of the NBA, you know, about a month ago that talked about, hey, look, you know, our plan, our goal is to return the NBA one day to Seattle. So, you know, look, as long as the desire's there and the plan for the arena is still solid, it's only a matter of time. I would say within 2 to 3 years, you'll see the NBA back here.
You hear him plenty filling in on the Jim Rome Show on our station, and he's also the host of the Drive program on KJR Sports Radio in Seattle. Dave Softy Mahler, our guest. Appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much.
No problem, buddy. Take care. Go Cannons.
Thank you, man. There is Dave Mahler joining us down the Subway Restaurant's
Go
Fresh
Cannons,
Take
indeed.
Hotline. Man, I miss the Cannons.
I do, too.
First ever job was working for the Calgary Cannons. Now, they weren't. They were the Marlins affiliate when I started working
not
for them.
Not the Mariners.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I was a frequent 8, 9, 10 game a year guy.
I love
7 or 8 years old all the way.
I love AAA baseball. I know AA is where most of the prospects come out of nowadays, but... Yeah, AAA ball was always fun. It is fun.
Ugh.
Continues to be fun for those who have it.
And I mean, you're spoiled getting AAA ball. And I mean, it is that close to major league quality. Like it is, close.
I agree, because you get a little more of a veteran presence in it than you do a double A. You'll still get more mistakes in double A. You'll get higher end prospects that'll jump AAA and go, but you'll still get a lot.
Thoughts on what you heard there?
Well, you know, it's not surprising to me. I think there's a natural built-in rivalry with Vancouver. I think there's a natural built-in rivalry with San Jose. His point about the regional aspect of Seattle, one, he got me thinking, because most of us have all spent time in Montana. We've spent time in Idaho. We have spent time, you know, in Spokane. But the Mariners, the Seahawks, all have regional presence deep in those areas, that, you know, the small towns in North Dakota, or not North Dakota, in Montana and Idaho carry Mariners games, right? And the Seahawks games. When you go to Target and Walmart, it's Seahawks.
Right.
And I know that sounds trite, but it's true. And to me, that has, you know, some value in it. And I think if you did put a team in Seattle, it would happen. Now, I want to make sure we're really clear on this, Pat, because my preference is, if Phoenix doesn't work, isn't working, not going to work, if they can't make this, finally pull the plug. My preference would be absolutely to put it back in Quebec City. Now, go. Make it happen. And if it can't go into Quebec City for whatever reason, then put it in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just become so apparent, so plain as the nose on your face, that those two markets will be held by the NHL as two time when they feel like they can go to 32 teams, auction them off, and you know what? The present 30 teams will reap the benefits of that.
And by doing that, and then also moving a team potentially from Phoenix to Seattle, you get them into another major media market that you're not in the United States. I mean, that's a media market of,
you know, it's
a pretty big deal.
It's funny,
regional.
When I first started in this business, it was always that argument of what do you got to do to become a national sport? And then there was this assessment, and it's the one I currently hold. The National Hockey League is a regional sport in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing wrong with that. It's a regional sport that puts up very strong numbers
in their
markets, but even in the Stanley Cup final on NBC. Terrific numbers. For what it is, right? It's not the NFL. It's not a major in golf. But the numbers are very respectable. They hold their own. This whole idea, I've always found it strange that when you chase the need to be important, when you feel like you have to go out and prove to everybody why we're important, we are important, keep telling ourselves we're important, it's false. It's it's empty. Be who you are. Be what you are. Those who love you will come find you. And I, quite honestly, I think that's in many ways is the popularity, sort of the media popularity of English football and football around the world. You know, I think there's always been kind of the ethnic tie to my home countries or our family's home countries. Yeah. But I think in the internet has certainly brought information about these things to us in a timely manner. I don't remember anybody ever coming and beating us over the head saying, why isn't soccer bigger? You know, I think it was regionally we had that conversation, but I'm talking about nationally. Why doesn't anybody carry this? Why? It just got there, found a home, people found it, people enjoy it, everybody's into it, bang. It's a going concern in North America.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge rights property to have. And again, it has nothing to do with, oh, I was always a fan. No, I'm just saying there was never this populist movement to why we, it can be. Maybe the regional leagues, you know, the old versions of soccer that we tried to get going in Calgary and Edmonton and all those things. But I'm just talking about it like, you know, premiership and stuff like that.
Right.
It found its way onto television. People found it. People love it. People support it. It has grown into a giant, giant North American sport entity on television. And I think the NHL is going that way too. You don't have to be in the Sun Belt. Be where you're going to be appreciated.
Yeah, and I think you're going to be appreciated more in a market like Seattle that's still a big market.
Yeah.
And that potentially could build you an arena that can hold your...
That was a great question. Fantastic question. If you go home this week, be proud of the question that you've asked, because it really, the whole idea of, okay, what if the NBA doesn't come? Is this big enough to, you know, create its own building? Fantastic question. Because I had always thought, well, if the NBA comes, then you can build the
right.
joint use facility, right? Now, the NBA is not coming next year, the year after. The NHL goes there. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility they'll build a building, but you bet it's going to be a joint.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to build an NHL-only facility.
No.
They're going to build one that can hold
basketball. But I thought that was an interesting point that you raised about, okay, what if the NBA isn't coming? You know, is it popular? Sure, it's popular enough as the secondary tenant, but is it going to be popular enough as the primary tenant?
Interesting. And just to piggyback off this before we hit the break, did you read this story about the
San Jose?
The city of Las Vegas and their $350 million plan to build a 20,000-seat arena in between the Monte Carlo and New York. So on the Strip, they don't have a tenant, NBA or NHL, but MGM and it's MGM and AEG have agreed to, they're going to do it. It's going to break ground next year.
Oh, it is going to break ground.
Summer of 2014. And open in the spring of 2016.
You know, I've had a fascination with this particular topic for a while.
Well, going back to Jerry Bruckheimer's involvement, and
there was plans. There was a very
was it Harrah's or Bally's that they were going to do that?
Very detailed online presentation about the arena itself. Look, you know, the NHL, quite honestly, is the perfect league to go in there from the standpoint that the gambling issue is a non-factor. But who are you going to attract? Are you going to attract tourists? Probably not. Are you going to attract native Las Vegans? That's what you want. They work varied hours, and they usually live north of the Strip. Are they going to come to the Strip to... I don't know, Pat.
Free parking.
I don't know, Pat.
Can always be...
The NFR can go there. You got 10 days booked for rodeo.
Yeah.
Concerts.
Well, and concerts will be big. And
let me ask you this. Would UFC move over there?
If MGM's buying it or building it, they'd probably say, yeah, move the UFC.
So that's almost an event a month.
Yeah.
Right? You can almost.
If you're bringing concerts in, you could probably almost run it without a major tenant.
Almost.
Sports tenant, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you put college basketball in there? Could you put UNLV in there?
Could you put...
Does UNLV still play Thomas and Mack?
Yeah, they play Thomas and Mack.
Because that's the whole thing, is you replace Thomas and Mack. Right?
Could you put... The ECHL team in there?
No.
You don't think they would move there?
No.
I know that they would not be supported well in that building, but would you keep them at the Orleans?
There's nothing. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a huge proponent of right size, right venue.
And that's perfect for them.
Curtains and stuff like that. You know, I that's part of the credit I give to the Calgary Hitmen is they work their butts off to try and put as many people in that building. Because it can be cavernous.
Yeah.
And you know, you can have the biggest crowd in your loop, but if you're playing in a building that's three or four times too big,
it's still going to make it seem empty.
Right? Yeah. It's a waste.
Well, it's like when Portland plays in the Rose Garden. It's like, holy cow, that thing can hold 40,000 people.
Yeah. Well, and you know, God love them, they're in the Stanley Cup Finals, but 6, 7, 8 years ago.
The United Center was 21,000.
Oh, and there was 4,000 in there for Flames-Hawks games on Sunday afternoon. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. And, you know, quite honestly, that's what it was like in Colorado this year, going to Avs games, because there was nobody in the upper bowl, and it's terrible. Just terrible.
So there you go. Seattle, a possibility, and looks like Las Vegas is going to have an NHL-NBA-ready facility for 2016, but whether or not it's going to have
a
team
or not. Well,
I wonder
if the PA will have a voice in that.
Or Paul Holmgren will have a voice in that.
Paul Holmgren will just, he'll just say, no, it's not happening. But you can't imagine the PA wouldn't want, we'd like that on the loop.
Yeah.
Right?
Calgary takes 3 trips a year to Las Vegas. It's all right.
So I'm going to Edmonton to play a game. Shouldn't we go to Vegas for a game?
When we come back, more bad news at quarterback for the Edmonton Eskimos. We'll delve into that with Dave Campbell of 630 Chat.
The mall has a casino in Edmonton. So
it's a beautiful mall.
It's kind of the same.
Beautiful mall. Not antiquated at all.
They used to have submarines. Don't anymore.
Nope, not antiquated at all. Big Show continues next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking football in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back in studio today, welcome back as we switch things up to the Canadian Football League. And man, oh man, the Edmonton Eskimos can't catch a break when it comes to their quarterback position. And neither can Matt Nichols. It's about as bad luck as it comes for him after a gruesome injury in the East Division semifinal last season. His first preseason game this year with an opportunity to be a starter in the Canadian Football League and in pro football for the first time. He tears his ACL and he's done for the year. Just awful luck. Dave Campbell joins us now from 630 Ched, the color voice of the Edmonton Eskimos. Yeah, it just doesn't get much worse than that for Nichols. I feel awful for him. How have you had an opportunity to hear from him? How's he taken this whole thing?
You know, Matt Nichols is one of the most positive of people you will ever meet, Pat, and he just met with the media about an hour ago, and obviously you can see the disappointment on his face, but you know, he says, I'm being tested here, and I just see this as just a little setback in my career. I just turned 26 years old, and he's going to work hard to get back on the field for 2014 training camp. So, you know, he's very positive. He's not down in the mouth. He's not feeling sorry for himself. He's going to do whatever he can to rehab as quickly as possible. Which is about a 7 to 9 month process in general terms. He'll have knee surgery in about 3 to 5 weeks once the swelling in the knee heals a little bit. He'll have the surgery. But he's very upbeat. He says, I'm going to stick around and I'm going to do what I can to help this team win.
And from the Eskimo side of things, we know how bad it was last year at that position, and we know how it just could not work itself out. I mean, Mike Riley's there, so at the very least there is another option, but this has to be another just blow to that position for the team, too.
Well, especially when there was a quarterback competition going on here, and both Mike Riley and Matt Nichols were performing very well in training camp, and you know, Matt Nichols performed well in the game before he left, and then Mike Riley didn't have the same amount of results, even though he did throw a touchdown pass. He had 2 drops on receivers that I think really hurt his numbers. But, you know, there was a really healthy competition going on here for that number one job, and, you know, and now you look at the move that Ed Hervey made in the early February of acquiring Mike Riley and signing him 2 weeks before free agency, and how much that is so vital now for the Edmonton Eskimos, is they do have some depth in behind Matt Nichols, or with Matt Nichols in their quarterback stable. So it's Mike Riley's team now, and I guess what has to be settled is, you know, how the depth chart will look behind Mike Riley, and perhaps Friday's final preseason game will determine that. But you know that Mike Riley is going to get a lot more time than expected this Friday in Vancouver than originally thought.
Dave Campbell's with us. He's the color voice of the Edmonton Eskimos, joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. Quarterback Matt Nichols is done for the season with a torn ACL. The quarterback competition angle, how important was that for this team going into the year, having these two guys push each other all the way through camp?
No, it was really important, and it just showed on the field. And as far as completion percentage is concerned, they were basically 1 percentage point away from each other. And, you know, and the team, I think for the team now, they looked at 2 quarterbacks that were bona fide leaders and that they believed in. And now Mike Riley is that player, is that leader. So now he can own this team, and he can take the bull by the horns, as they say, and lead the huddle and lead everyone out in the field. But everyone was really excited about the quarterback competition because they felt, you know, and not that you want a quarterback controversy here, but the prevailing thought was you have two quality quarterbacks that can win for this football team. So it was a very, very positive experience, I think, for this team to really see that the organization went out and, you know, they picked up a key piece in Mike Riley to create some competition for that number one job.
Did you have a horse in the race? Did you have any idea as to who you thought might come out of it before this injury?
I gave the slight edge to Matt Nichols just because he was more familiar with the personnel, and Mike Riley had to come in and learn, you know, tendencies of receivers that he hasn't seen before and that sort of thing. I think Mike Riley's been a pretty good study here. But, you know, I would give a slight edge to Matt Nichols before the injury, and I thought, you know, he looked better in the preseason game than even though he threw two interceptions, the one that led to the injury, and the other one was, you know, not a good throw on his part. But, you know, the second one was a mistake by the receiver, I thought. But I gave a slight edge to Matt Nichols just because he's familiar with the people that he's working with.
Dave Campbell's with us. He is the color voice of the Edmonton Eskimos, joining us here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Okay, so let's get into who the number one quarterback's going to be on opening day, and that's Mike Riley.
Yep.
What have we seen from him so far through training camp? What has stood out to you?
Well, what stands out mostly for me is, he's a very big man. I mean, he almost looks like a linebacker more than a quarterback, so... but he's very tall. He's very lanky in the pocket. He reads well downfield. He moves well for a big man. And I think as far as the role that he has, you know, in the huddle and talking to his teammates and, you know, trying to be a good leader out there, I think he's very good at. And, you know, we're going to find out if the bite is as big as the bark, because he was, you know, I would say campaigning in the offseason that I'm the guy, I'm the number one quarterback, and I'm ready for this step. So, you know, here he is now. You know, the controversy or any potential controversy is over, and Mike Riley just needs to come through, and Mike Riley needs to stay healthy as well, because you look at what's behind Mike Riley now. I would say Kerry Joseph is probably the backup, and then you got Ja'Cory Harris and Jonathan Crompton, who are unknowns in this league, and they're in their first season. So it is so important for Mike Riley to play well and stay healthy.
Do you think he can do it? Do you think he's got the ability to be a number one in this league?
I don't know. You know, and I'm not trying to duck the question, but I honestly don't know.
Right.
I haven't seen enough of him. I've seen, you know, we saw him for three games last year. He looked good in, you know, in a couple of them. He won one game for the BC Lions. I think, you know, he's got the poise, he's got the confidence, and he's got the leadership ability. Now, can he turn that, you know, can he turn that on in the on the field? And he's working with the new system offensively under Doug Sams, who was a genius in Hamilton last year, working alongside George Cortez. And you know, he's got a good brain with them. There's no question about it. You know, the thing with BC is that he was familiar with his personnel. You know, when he had to come in and play against the Edmonton Eskimos in late October, he was playing with a lot of the receivers that he played with on the, you know, on scout teams.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's learning from, I will say, you know, out of the gate, better receivers than he did, you know, in his time with the BC Lions. But it helps to be under, you know, good people like Jacques Chapdelaine in BC, their offensive coordinator, and Travis Lule has been, you know, right in my mind right now, still the best quarterback in the Canadian Football League. So, but can he put all of those intangibles together? And, you know, I like the looks of him, but in a game situation, it's a totally different story. So, I don't know. It's hard to tell. He, like I say, the bite has to be as big as the bark, and I'm not sure about it right now.
Eskimos lose their preseason opener at home 31-24 at the hands of the Riders, but a lot of the offensive starters, especially at receiver, don't even get into the game. So not the most true presentation of what the Eskimos are going to be. But overall, I wonder what are expectations for this team this year?
This team is a real wild card, I think, in the Western Division because of the uncertainty of the offense and at the quarterback position. And even with Matt Nichols, healthy, there was still a question mark, you know, because you're dealing with people that, you know, with quarterbacks and players that have tremendous potential, but, you know, had five starts in between them in Nichols and Riley. So offensively, there's a bit of a concern, you know, with the quarterbacking. There's a bigger concern with the offensive line. They have been so in training camp, and I think we're you know, fair to average, or, you know, sort of good maybe on Friday. So they struggled. I think the strength of the defense is their defense. Our strength of the team is their defense. Their front four looks dominant. Their front seven looks. Their linebacking core looks solid with the addition of a rookie named Rennie Curran. He looks solid in behind J.C. Sherritt. And you know, their secondary is a question mark too. Joe Burnett is moving all the way from the wide side corner to the short side halfback position, and he led the league in CFL in interceptions in the CFL last year, and now he's, you know, closer to the quarterback, and he's going to face the best receivers in the league now on a week by week basis, and, you know, he's going to be more involved. So the defense should be fine, but it's, you know, that offense is going to be a bit of a work in progress, I think.
Hey, Dave, as always, appreciate this, man. We'll talk to you lots this summer, man.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Pat.
There's Dave Campbell, the color voice of the Edmonton Eskimos, joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. Just horrible news for Matt Nichols. And now Mike Riley is the starting quarterback for the Edmonton Eskimos. Next up for the Calgary Stampeders, 2 days from today, they're back in preseason action at Mosaic Stadium in Saskatchewan. 8 o'clock kickoff in Regina. We got the Real Football Show for you at 7 o'clock on Thursday night, getting you set for the Riders and the Stamps as both teams close out their preseason schedules. Take a break. When we come back, we go around the NHL. You're locked on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.